The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
Welcome into the latest edition of ESPN FC. I'm Dan Thomas, joined in the studio today by Ali Moreno and Stevie Nicol. Later on in the show, James Ollie will be joining us from Baltimore to give us all the latest from Arsenal's pre-season. But we kick things off with Bayern Munich's pre-season, because look who's there.
Hey!
We've talked about him a lot, haven't we, over the last few weeks. The future of Robert Lewandowski, as it stands, he is a Bayern Munich player and is training with his teammates. Well, for more on this, let's welcome in, shall we, Jan Arge Fjortoff, who's on his holiday at the moment, by the way, but so keen is he to talk about Robert Lewandowski. Look at that tan as well. That Lewandowski's future, he wants to be with us. He's going to be there, isn't he? That's it. He's going to be a Bayern player next season, Jan.
Well, for more than 2 months now, his language has been, I want to go to Barcelona. And as you said, Dan, he's back in training, but now his body language is telling us something. He's too late to two sessions. This is keeping up with Bayern at the moment. The German journalists are going ballistic. They're showing everything, going into testing, out of testing. It's all in a minute. Who is hugging, who is not hugging. But he is desperate to get away. And his body language in training, not very good. He looks like a player wants to leave. And there is some new deadlines. I can give you those deadlines. Saturday, there's going to be a team presentation in the Allianz Arena. Imagine all the fans in the stadium. They're going to introduce one-on-one player. And ladies and gentlemen, Robert Lewandowski, the player who wants to leave, take a big welcome for him. So I think there could be some changes before Saturday. And Monday, of course, they're going to their training camp in USA, traveling on Monday. So there are things to be done the next hours in Munich and in Barcelona.
Jan, you mentioned the fans. What's their take on this?
I think they have had enough. I think that Salihamidzic has done what you should do when the people get a bit moody. You have to throw them bread and sausages, as they do in Bayern, and they have to get new players in. And to be fair to Salihamidzic, he's managed to get Mané in. It's a great signing for the Bundesliga, great signing for Bayern Munich. He has more or less managed, or is on his way, to get De Ligt in. It's all about now agreeing with Juventus. He's talked the player into that. The funny thing is that Bayern is using this strategy to get Mané and De Ligt to tell their club that they want to leave. Barcelona tell Lewandowski, can you tell Bayern you want to leave? But then he's a traitor. That is the name of the game. And then the Bayern fans will say, well, Mané and De Ligt are saying nothing in the media. And my God, Lewandowski has used the media to tell that I want to leave the club.
It's a fascinating dynamic from all different angles, Stevie.
Yeah.
From Nagelsmann's angle, like, how would you deal with this?
Wow. My goodness.
Because we're hearing, for example, there was a practice match, and whoever lost the match then had to do push-ups. He was the only one who didn't do the push-ups because he was on the losing team. Like, one rotten apple.
The problem is you can't win, you know, because you've got your best player who wants away. If he doesn't do sit-ups and everybody else is, then under normal circumstances, you go up, you stick your finger in the guy's face and say, hey, everybody else is doing it. But at the same time, you're trying to keep this guy on side.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a no-win situation, because even though this guy's your number one player and you try to keep him on side, if I'm one of the Bayern players and I'm working and he's not because he doesn't want to do it, I don't care how good a player he is, it's going to upset the rest of the team. So you can't win either way. If you come down hard on Lewandowski, then he might just say, you know what, I might have wanted away before, but if you're going to start, then you know what? Even if I don't, I'm doing nothing. I mean, you can't win. Nagelsmann can't win.
Do you leave him in Germany when they go to the States?
Wow. Well, I think, first of all, you need to have a handle on what you think the outcome's going to be.
Right.
And if you think there's no way that Salah Hamza it up the stair is going to let this guy go, then you have to take him and you have to try and work on him. You've got to get him in your room
but
in the afternoon.
Does that not just cause problems, though, like within
well,
the
no, because you're trying your best to work on the guy.
Right.
You're trying your best to get... Because by all accounts, Lewandowski's a good person. He's a good guy, never caused trouble, always works hard, always on time. Just a perfect professional. So you, if you're the manager, you're trying to work on every good bit of this guy and try and get him back on side somehow.
Say you're a Thomas Muller figure within that camp.
Mm.
What role, if any, do you play in this?
I think as a fellow professional, as a teammate, you reach out to Lewandowski, and not in front of everybody, but hey, let's have a coffee.
Right.
Come on down. Let's have a conversation, professional to professional, friend to friend, man to man. What do you want? What do you need?
I want to leave.
Yes. What do you need from us?
To help me leave.
Okay, right. Is there any way back? And if there is no way back, then I think the conversation takes a different tone. And
what sort of tone? Don't ruin it for the rest of us?
Or? Well, hey, Robert, we got to prepare for the season, right? And so you do what you need to do. You take care of yourself. But we would ask you to continue to be a professional for as long as you're here. This is the standard that you have set for yourself. Don't go away from that standard. Don't leave an image that you don't need to leave because you're looking ahead to Barcelona and you have whatever feelings you have with Bayern Munich right now. Please have the big picture in mind and understand that what you have done in Bayern Munich has been historic. Don't taint that image because of poor behavior.
Yeah, and has that ship already sailed?
Well, first of all, it's sailed. And secondly, I think that the Thomas Muller will also think that he's a fellow professional who knows that there are some offers. He's 33. Thomas Muller could have had an offer from Real Madrid and Barcelona. He would have stayed anyway. I think there is more understanding of his situation among the players than the Bayern management like to think. Because let's not forget the history behind this. It's just, Robert Lewandowski is very angry how the Erling Haaland situation was handled by the same management of Bayern Munich. So I think there is no way back for him. I think it's all a matter of for Barcelona to come up with enough money. There was a funny situation in training today where they say that, well, in a modern game of football, now we are talking about a player who scores 41 goals, which is quite modern in my opinion, but then in a modern day in football, you need strikers who do pressing. So there was an exercise today in training where they were practicing pressing and gegenpressing and all that comes with that. And Robert Lewandowski was the only striker who was with playing 5-2 in a circle beside that exercise. So it's all about also now, I guess, for the Bayern management and team Lewandowski to win the kind of history, how we tell the history now that he is going to keep his, as Ali's talking about, his reputation at the club. So I think that maybe we'll see tomorrow or Saturday there will be a solution here, because the solution, there is no way that a rotten apple can be in that basket, because that would make a big, big trouble for Bayern Munich this coming season.
If I'm Barcelona looking at all of this playing out, Jan, I'm taking my foot off the gas, though, surely a little bit, just waiting for all this to explode and Bayern to go, look, just take him. We just don't need, as you say, this rotten apple. So there's surely, from a Barcelona perspective, there's no rush.
Yeah, but the problem is, Dan, that Barcelona, I mean, we could have another program just talking about their situation. They have a De Jong. They have a De Jong that they want to leave, and they have agreed with Manchester United, but they call him traitor because he wants to stay. And he said, please, can I have my money before I leave? So, I mean, if the solution is Barcelona, it's not the right answer we are putting in here, because I think that is complicated enough. I think this is all about now for Salihamidzic and Oliver Kahn to sit down with Barcelona, just find a solution the next 48 hours, because now it's turning into something very dirty game, which is quite certain that he will come back, that he will not strike. We knew that. But his body language, everything, he has already in his mind said, auf Wiedersehen zum Bayern. He's already gone. It's just his body is hanging around in Sevenerstrasse.
Do Bayern need him to go to get De Ligt in, Jan?
Also, good question, because they have talked De Ligt into to say that I want to be a part of the project at Bayern Munich, but still they're talking about 80, 90 million euro. That is a lot of money also for Bayern. So they have to sell. You have the feeling they have to sell, but it's all about who is blinking first somehow, because they need that money. They are talking about this famous Festengeldkonto. That means an account with a lot of money that they used to have at Bayern. The problem is with the inflation in transfer fee. That is 120, 130 million euro account. And now you can get the bus driver from Real Madrid for that price.
But this has to be a priority, doesn't it, for Bayern? To get some sort of defensive quality in?
Do you know what? It just seems an awful long time since things were normal. Transfers used to be normal.
Oh, God, now where are we going?
It's
back in the day, Dan, back in the day.
I mean, is there any transfer that's straightforward anymore?
Right.
Without three teams being involved, one player who wants away, who they try to get the other one to say something so they can either discipline him or get him. It just doesn't seem straightforward anymore.
Just back to my point, they need De Ligt, yes?
Absolutely, they need De Ligt. They need a centre-back.
Yes.
You know, but if I'm buying, I'm not paying that amount of money for De Ligt.
Really?
I don't think he's worth that amount of money.
Why not?
Well, because I don't think he is. I don't think he's as good as people think he is. I certainly don't. You know, he hasn't. I don't think he's been particularly great at Juventus. Mm. Juventus haven't had a good defence for two or three seasons. You know, they've been letting all kinds of goals in, and he's been part of it. So, yes, they need a centre back, and he's only 22, so he could maybe get better. And if Upamecano can sort himself out, maybe the two of them could be a good partnership.
Right.
But the money side of it doesn't add up to me. And the way the whole transfer thing is, you know, it's not about a straightforward transfer. It's, well, if he does this, if this guy over here does that and this and that. So it's just mental.
Go on, Jan.
Yeah, now it's just interesting that list we had there, because with Pavard, you have a French world champion who they don't rate anymore at Bayern. I can understand that. Then you have Hernandez, who is a record signing for them, who came from Spain. He is not kind of deliver what they wanted from an Upamecano, as Stevie is saying. He hasn't sorted him out yet. Maybe because he is Upamecano, he will never be a Franz Beckenbauer, he will never be a leader. So that's what they try to sell their fans, that they need De Ligt, because he's a leader. But he's still 22, and there are Dutch football experts who say that he doesn't have that ability, and there are some saying he got it. It's just funny when I see always De Ligt, I'm thinking of Manchester United, who said that we don't want De Ligt because we've seen his father and he's too fat. So we are afraid of De Ligt turning into being with too fat. So there are different recruiting policies here in the different clubs. Let's put it that way.
We've missed you, Jan. Meanwhile,
he's got it in the genes.
Reports are suggesting that Bayern have to choose between Gnabry and Sané, and they're going to choose Gnabry, and Sané could be going to Real Madrid.
This is a very fresh rumor who's coming from Spain. Just before the show, I checked with my people in Munich. They say it's not very likely. Of course, with Sané now, when you come with Mané in, he won't have so many chances, so to say, but they still see his potential. I can't see that happening. What I can see is that Gnabry, it seems that he will extend his contract. And Gnabry, I think, could be, if they leave, or if and when Robert Lewandowski is leaving, you could see Gnabry being that number nine striker as well. But I love Sané. Yes, he hasn't delivered and in all games like he's doing in Eclipse here. But Sané, brilliant player, and both Flick and Nagelsmann are very interested to get him going. And I think with the Qatar World Cup coming up, Sané will be very careful not going into a new environment, because I think he's very, very eager to be in that German squad and play a role during the World Cup in Qatar.
Like Jan, when Sané's on it, he is brilliant to watch, because he's a little bit unique in that sense that he can take it past people. Great finisher as well. Just edge-of-seat sort of player.
Mm-hmm.
Do Real Madrid need him?
In those moments, you would want Leroy Sané to be in any of your teams. If you're a fan, and you see Leroy Sané play and you see those moments, you go, yeah, this is a guy we can use. And yet, Pep Guardiola, it wasn't for him. He goes to Bayern Munich and he hasn't been consistent enough. So at some point you start to ask the question, can this guy do it consistently for me? Can he produce? Can he be a guy that every day shows up and not just flashes? And it's a question that it's a fair question to ask of him because it's been year after year after year. To the point that Germany decided in the 2018 World Cup, we don't need him. A team that was struggling to create chances and a team that was struggling to score goals, not for us. It says something about the player.
Right.
That coaches at the highest level continue to pass on him and continue to choose other players over him. That, I think, is a referendum on him as a player and his career.
From a coaching perspective, Stevie, would it be fair to say this is the most frustrating player to deal with?
No question. And I'm going to guess that he's probably not the best guy sitting on the bench either. You know, he's no Divock Origi, who, regardless of what, whether he plays or whether he doesn't, has got a smile on his face, is absolutely perfect for everything. But he's the kind of guy that can get you the sack. You know, he's the kind of guy who one day does one thing, you play him, and then he just doesn't give you anything. And when you're, as a coach, if you're under pressure to get results,
right,
he's the type of guy that gets you the sack.
Is that fair, Jan?
Yeah, it's fair and not fair, because I think that Sané's problem as well is his body language. And you can discuss, are you born with a body language? We remember back in the days when Özil had a bad game. It was not like he had a bad game. He looks like the worst man playing in London. I mean, that was his body language. So that there are players who have bad games, but it looks like they're fighting, they look like they're battling. And that is a problem, a part of Sané as well. His body language is not good. But also we saw the numbers there. The first year he had 14 plus 14 goals and assists. And then the next season, 10 plus 10. Meaning that it's a downfall in his career. And as Al said, he has missed the World Cup already. And he will be desperate to make the squad. So that's why I don't think that Sané will leave. I think that he will still have the trust of Nagelsmann, at least for another season. And Hansi Flick knows that he has a national team that is depending that people like Sané is producing the goods. If not, Germany can't be a contender for a semi-final, quarter-final of the World Cup.
Meanwhile, Jan being on means we're contractually obliged to bring up Erling Haaland. And Edward Mendy, the Chelsea goalkeeper, was asked about Manchester City's latest addition, saying, we just have to focus on every striker, every team we play to win. I look at Haaland like I look at, say, Benteke at Palace. It's not that different between Palace and City. You have to be focused because he's still a striker and he can score. Jan?
Well, I guess there are two things that I think when I see that quote. First of all, keep that quote, because Mendy is playing against Haaland this season a couple of three times. So we'll save that. Secondly, Mendy, I hope that Xhaka was on the show tonight, because then I could say, well, how serious do we take goalkeepers' view on that? But he's not. And I see a Mendy trying to be a bit wannabe intellectual professor in football. And he wants to take...
Wow. So,
no, I see that.
Hey, there's a lot of goalies
doing
that.
Isn't he just saying, it doesn't matter if it's Benteke or Haaland, I approach the game the same way? Isn't it that simple?
Not really.
No?
Not really. Because you're not supposed to do that. If you're the goalkeeper,
right,
like an outfield player, if I'm playing against you,
yes,
or I'm playing against Ali,
right,
I'm thinking about different things.
What are you thinking about playing against me?
So you tell me. So,
yeah. Everything is wild.
I'm thinking I can have another cup of tea and another cigar when I'm playing against you. But no, that's what you should be thinking about. You can't say that.
Right.
Particularly, I mean, how can you even say Haaland and Benteke in the same breath?
Right.
So, no, I'm with Jan. He's another goalie trying to make it out as if he's actually got some brains.
Wow.
Oh, wow. 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 Wow.
We got pretty Dr. Xhaka on to address that.
He tried to get cute.
Do you think so?
I think he tried to get cute. I understand what you're saying, Dan, but he tried to get cute and saying, all the strikers I treat the same. And you shouldn't.
Right.
You shouldn't. And to say that I don't see much of a difference between Crystal Palace and Manchester City, well, I do. And so does everybody else. So you better pay more attention when you're playing against Manchester City and Erling Haaland. This was unnecessary. You don't need to make that comparison, by the way. You can say, hey, look, I look at every striker the same. I evaluate what their strengths are, what their weaknesses are, and I prepare according to that. And you're done. You don't have to bring the two names and have that contrast, because now you go down that path that I don't think you can recover.
City have got their business done pretty early, haven't they, in this transfer window. Manchester United, meanwhile, have been rather sluggish. However, suggestions are that Lisandro Martinez is almost a done deal to go to Old Trafford to, of course, link up once again with Ten Hag. Jan, is this the sort of addition that United squad needs?
Yes. If you ask me if they need a defender, it is definitely yes. But I asked the other day, are there any players left at Ajax at the moment? They've all gone. And it's the only philosophy that is going to be Christian Eriksen, De Jong, Marco van Basten still around. Is he there? I mean, there's so much Ajax going on in the different clubs now. But yes, this is a good start for Manchester United. And I think it's time for them to start seriously now to see what players they can get in. And I think that the first one needs to be sold is Cristiano Ronaldo. But now they at least got a player in, so the fans will be happy. But after that win against Liverpool, I guess they will be happy anyway. This is going to be a fantastic season for Manchester United. And that's maybe it. The management are buying on that.
I think being in the sun a bit too long, Jan. to keep up to date with all the latest Manchester United transfers and indeed some of the other clubs as well, be sure to check out Transfer Talk over on the website. Not long now then till the Bundesliga kicks off once again here on ESPN. It all starts August the 5th, Bayern Munich away against Eintracht Frankfurt.
Passion, drive and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights and more. Whether you're into speed, power or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't a search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/FC. Just go to Indeed.com/FC right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on the podcast. Indeed.com/FC, terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Arsenal, of course, been busy this summer. Gabriel Jesus making that big money move from Manchester City. Well, James Ollie sat down with Granit Xhaka to talk about the Brazilian joining the club.
I mean, everyone knows he's, first of all, an amazing player. Because if you don't have this quality, you don't play in this amazing club, in the Man City, for example, as well here with us. I heard a lot about him. The people around spoke very positive about him. I had a lunch with him as well. Very humble qualities and thinks very, very far, and he will bring something more than qualities for us. He will bring this winner mentality day by day, weekend by weekend. And I'm very, very happy to have him and the others in our team.
I mean, Jesus obviously has taken a lot of attention. It seems from the outside that he's a perfect fit. You know, he presses well, he's a good age, he's got a good goal record. Is that how it feels early days in the camp with him?
Absolutely. I mean, with him and with Eddie, we have a lot of quality now in the front as well. Young, they have the hunger to scoring as well, to work for the team. And Gabriel, for example, he brings the experience as well, the experience in top level. And this is what we need as well.
Well, Granit Xhaka speaking to James Ollie, who joins us now from Baltimore. What's the feeling in the Arsenal camp? I imagine it's quite a buzz, isn't it, at the moment, considering Jesus coming in?
Yeah, it's very positive. They've spent quite a lot of money earlier in the window. The players have come back in stages. Some of them were given an extended holiday, but they're all back together now. And so they're starting to mingle to get to know each other for the first time. And, you know, I think Granit was talking there about Jesus and the impact that he feels he can make sort of immediately. He knows the Premier League. It does feel like the perfect fit for them in the sense of, you know, they need a proven goal scorer. They need someone who sets the press from the front, absolutely fits into the way that Mikel Arteta plays. And there's a lot of excitement about seeing how he's going to get on.
What's the missing link, though, that Arsenal still need to sort out, do you think, James?
Well, I mean, they've got one or two other issues. The fact that they were interested in signing Rafinha tells you that they are looking for another wide player. I think they still, although they've added Vieira, they've got Odegaard, they've got Smith Rowe and Saka, they still probably want one more for a bit more creativity. You'd worry about them a little bit in central midfield. You feel like they probably need another one in there. And defensively, they've never been the most solid team, although that has improved under Mikel Arteta. So I think, you know, potentially another centre-back or maybe a left-sided centre-back. They were looking at Lisandro Martinez from Ajax. There's now talk today that they're moving on to Zinchenko, the Manchester City defender, who can also play in midfield, so he could kind of fill both of those slots. So I think there's still some business for Arsenal to do for them to be fully satisfied in this window.
Say, Steve Nicol, you're an Arsenal fan. How would you be feeling at the moment?
Well, I think you should be pleased that they've got Gabriel Jesus. I think they'll be a little disappointed that they haven't quite filled out the squad.
Right.
Because I think with their starting 11, they can give anybody a game. The question is the squad big enough to do it over a full season, a full campaign? So, Jesus, no question. You know, Matt Turner is there as a backup. Marquinhos, I'm not sure whether gets straight in either. And Vieira, I'm not sure gets straight in. So, if you look at that, somebody would maybe say to me, well, they have kind of puffed the squad out a little bit. But they've puffed it out with players, particularly the three I mentioned, are not ready for the Premier League. So if they get some early injuries to that starting 11, then Arsenal could maybe struggle again.
Really?
Well, with the starting 11, I said, they can compete with anybody on any given day.
Mm.
But if they start the season with some injuries, if they have two or three injuries, and they have to play those players that I'm talking about that we just showed, who are not ready, then they could end up being the Arsenal of last Premier League, the start of last Premier League season. So they're kind of, they're on the edge of being good, but when things go against them, they could be tough to start with.
But obviously they're chasing Spurs, really. That's the main target, is to get that fourth spot. And what you'd be heartened with is that they've done business early, as opposed to Manchester United still labouring slightly in that department. So you look at Arsenal bringing in Jesus, trying to work on the positives that Arteta brought in last season. I think he's been a bit negative.
Yeah, and I think instead of saying that they're on the edge, I would say that they're on the cusp.
Oh, what's the difference between the cusp and the edge?
Well, the difference is that the cusp has a more positive connotation to it. I think you should be encouraged if you're an Arsenal fan.
Yeah.
That at the very least, you are addressing some of the issues and some of the shortcomings. And in Gabriel Jesus, if indeed he becomes a player for them that they think he's going to be, and that goal scorer and that guy who's going to press from the front, all the things that James just mentioned, if he is that player, then I think you're already winning in the transfer market. But it's not a full, complete team just yet. There are other issues that must be addressed. And as it pertains to Spurs, yes, if indeed this is the team that you're trying to catch, you look at Spurs and what they have done so far, and I think they still maintain themselves above Arsenal. Arsenal, it's their responsibility to close the gap. I think the best thing that could happen for Arsenal, for Antonio Conte to continue to drive this team crazy in preseason.
We'll get to that in a moment. James?
So the question is, right, does signing Gabriel Jesus put Arsenal in the top four? You can't turn around and say yes.
Right, but you can't turn around and say no.
That's why they're on the cusp.
Yeah. Are they on the cusp or on the edge, James?
Well, I think a lot of this depends on how seriously they take the Europa League, because if he wants to try and compete in two different competitions, then, you know, he's not going to have the squad depth to do that. I think Steve's right in the sense of saying you look at that starting 11 on their best day and they are competitive. They, you know, I think they have made good signings to improve the quality of that starting 11. But if they're trying to now play Thursday, Sunday, remember they played a game a week in the second half of the season. They weren't even in the FA Cup and they still missed out on the top four. They still looked a bit leggy at the end of the season and they didn't quite have enough to get over the line. And I think a lot of that was down to the fact that they were relying on players like Saka and Smith Rowe in particular, Odegaard, who were really carrying the team in that second half of the season in an attacking sense. And I think that's why they've looked to Gabriel Jesus and Vieira, those players, to come in and try and just take a little bit of the pressure off those guys. And if they do rotate on those Thursdays and keep the players fresh for the Sunday games, the Premier League games, then they've got a good chance, I think, of testing the teams around them to finish fourth. They're not going to finish any higher than that. They're clearly still well behind Liverpool, Manchester City and Chelsea. And Spurs, I think, were bought very well this summer. I think we're about to talk about, you know, Antonio Conte and the work that he's doing with them in pre-season. But Spurs will be the target for them. Ironically, Spurs will be looking higher than fourth. Mm. But I think Arsenal will be looking at Spurs and thinking, if we can finish above them, then we're probably going to finish in the top four.
James, you mentioned it. We've talked about it a lot over recent days. The 42 pitch lengths that Antonio Conte made his team run. Obviously with Arsenal, but you hear about other clubs as well, particularly in London. Have you heard any complaints about this? Are the players upset about this regime or taking it on the, well, taking it lying down?
I think what he's done quite cleverly is he's essentially outlined to the group the players he wants this season and the players he doesn't. And those that haven't necessarily left the club yet, if you think about Ndombele, Lo Celso, those kind of players, they are surplus to requirements. They are the ones who will be looking at this sort of thing and thinking, well, this isn't for me. It doesn't matter. What's the point of going through the hard yards because I'm not going to play? He's kind of got this core group together. He's got a lot of these players in early as well, the new signings, so he can bed them in. And I think what you're seeing is the buy-in from the top players. That's particularly key, and none more so than Harry Kane. We all thought last summer that Harry Kane was going to leave Spurs. I think that he's felt for a while that this squad needs a shake-up. It needs to be taken to the next level physically, mentally, in terms of their approach and their consistency throughout the season. And if these are the hard yards that need to get Spurs closer to trying to challenge for the Premier League title, I still think they're short of doing that. But Antonio Conte is making no secret of this. There's none of this messing about for him of saying, oh, you know, we need time and we need to think about the top four and the, you know, the gap to the top is still large and all this. He is trying to turn Tottenham into Premier League title contenders next season. And if they've got to go through and be physically stronger and more robust than they've been in the past and really hit that level, then this is the work they've got to do. And at the moment, they're all buying into it.
James, thank you. What's he got to try? What were you saying? Doing crab cakes in Baltimore, uh-huh, isn't it?
Absolutely.
There you go. Lovely.
Maryland crab cakes.
Apparently, they're all the rage here. I can't
Beautiful.
Wait.
Beautiful. Stevie loves them.
Recommend them.
Just a reminder, we've got an exclusive with Christian Pulisic for tomorrow's show. Be sure to join us. He sits down and chats to Hercules Gomez.
Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They are the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at lectricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's L-E-C-T-R-I-C-E-bikes.com.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPN pods. That's amazon.com/ESPN pods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
England, of course, already through to the knockout stages of Euro 2022. On Friday, they take on Northern Ireland. For more on this, here's Kay and the gang.
Thanks, Dan. Yes, a dead rubber tomorrow between England and Northern Ireland. Northern Ireland already out. England already through to the quarterfinals. They know they'll be avoiding Germany as well, and we'll get to that in just a moment. Julie, how does Serena Wiegmann play this? Does she put her subs on? How many does she use? How does she keep that momentum going? What does she do here?
It's interesting because days of old, when you only had three subs total in a match, you had more tired legs in this final match. So you were resting more players in that third game, especially when you're sitting on six. I think she is going to rest some players. Clearly, you'll look at the players who have a little bit of knocks, maybe who have their loads are high, their minutes are high. She'll rest those. But I don't think you're going to see wholesale changes like you would have in the past. I think she's going to try and build as she does. She's pretty consistent with her starting lineup. She likes to, knowing her time with the Dutch, she likes to stay consistent. She likes to keep things really level. She's not going to be high and low in terms of the emotion of that moment, but I think you will see some changes, but not wholesale.
Yeah, I think that I agree with that completely, and I think then as the game wears on, we'll see more changes using all five subs just to get some players that maybe haven't had as many minutes into the game. But I also think it sends a message after that 8-0 win, sticking with the majority of your lineup, saying, hey, we're here to be consistent. We're not going to play off of that. We're going to one game at a time.
Yeah,
going forward.
And plus, she made five changes in that second half against Norway because she could. She was up so many at halftime, right?
Yeah, we've seen those triple
So there wasn't a lot of minutes on their legs.
You talked about her staying level. How does she keep her women level after scoring eight goals against Norway? How does she bring them back down to earth to not get carried away with themselves?
Well, the one thing you know about Serena Wiegmann is she is just steady. I mean, I think this is the calming presence, which actually is a gift because all of England is like, it's coming home, right? You know the excitement. Finally.
I didn't say that, would we? I also think the expectations, though, that are on this team will also help keep them level. Because, yes, everyone's saying it's coming home. But at the same time, I think they know they're here for business. They want to win this tournament. But it is one game at a time.
And the thing you know about tournaments, I mean, the one thing we always talked about as a U.S. team is you never let it go like this.
Yep. Right.
You want everything. You're very cognizant. Like, always stay like this. The highs, the lows. You don't want that. You want this. And that's what she's really good at, and that experience will be huge for the players.
Do you know what else they're really good at is avoiding talking about Germany. Yesterday we had Alexis Nunes in the camp talking to all the England team, trying to get them on the record.
Nothing.
Saying that they were happy to be avoiding Germany in the next round.
No.
Wiegmann has gotten
nothing.
In there.
We can say it, can't we? They're happy to be avoiding Germany.
Oh, I certainly would be. I mean, yeah. Germany after that first game and their win, convincing win, shot right up to the top of this tournament for me. What a team. What some performances they put together.
Yeah, absolutely they're happy. They're getting a Spain that wants to play, but there's not enough of, you know, this bite in the box, and this is the thing we've known about Spain. Obviously losing their two key players in Putellas and Hermoso means they're deplenished in that area, but I think they absolutely want Spain or Denmark over Germany.
You know better than me, obviously. You've played in tournaments, and you see often that they'll say, oh, it's better to face them now because we've got to beat anyone anyway. What is better to do? Is it better to face the best teams early, or is it better to get that momentum to beat or come up against the final boss, shall we say, in a final?
I think that's what you just said, so it sounds good. You're like, well, we got to play him anyways. Let's play him now. Come on. And you're really like, crap, I really didn't want him right then.
Right. So you do want it to get to the end.
You want it to get the route to be,
obviously, it's going to get progressively harder, but not the hardest it can get too early. Is that how it would be?
Yeah, certainly. And again, it goes back to what Julie was saying. Keeping level-headed regardless of who you're playing. England's going to be playing Northern Ireland. Can't have any slip-ups. Come out from the first whistle. Be convincing and commanding in their performance. And then continue to build again throughout the tournament.
How high on the list of favorites from what we've seen so far are England for you now then, Julie?
I would put them definitely in my top two.
Top two.
Top two. Along
who's with your Germany. Who's the other one in there?
Along with Germany.
Okay.
What about you, Laurie?
I agree with that, too. I mean, that would be an interesting final that I think that all of us would be pretty pumped about. So
I would sneak France in there, but knowing how France is, I'm going to keep them at third.
England and Germany in the final. You heard it here first, Anne.
What could possibly go wrong? Thank you very much, guys. As I mentioned, of course, tomorrow sees Austria against Norway, plus England against Northern Ireland. We'll be discussing both those games on the next edition of the show. That's it. That brings us to the end of today's show. Thank you very much for joining us. We'll, of course, be back tomorrow for more, but be sure to stay tuned. Jan is back. Stevie and Ali here as well to answer your questions on Extra Time. Welcome in then to the latest edition of Extra Time. Ali and Stevie with us here in the studio. And Jan on holiday.
Aha. Uh-huh.
But still volunteering to come on mainly so he can show off his tan.
What a professional.
I think. He's got the white shirt to emphasize it. The buttons, obviously.
Yes,
done.
Yes.
Three buttons. Yeah,
he didn't volunteer at all.
He did.
Yeah, and you didn't. I bet you never told your missus you volunteered on vacation.
That is true, Stevie. Right, I didn't say that. I say that when Reverend Lewandowski is headlining, I have to be on. That's what I said.
There you go, you see?
Yeah.
No, Jan knows it. He loves it. Daniel. He wants to get involved. Where are you, Jan? Can you divulge that?
I am in Sardinia, Italy, for my training camp before the next season.
Oh, beautiful. Very nice.
Training camp is going really well. Yeah. Really well.
Meanwhile, me and Stephen spent the evening together yesterday, didn't we, Stevie? We played some pool, and what's brilliant about playing with former professionals, even when they try to just enjoy it, the edge, the competitive edge kicks in. Jan, he was so angry at one stage. Really proper angry.
I was, yeah. Yeah. We had, actually, it was Scotland against England.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Me and Donaldson.
Yes.
Against Cahal.
Yeah, people don't know these people.
No, fair enough. And we were getting beat, and I was playing absolute garbage. And they were throwing in little comments as well.
Uh-huh. But Ali was getting, he was just,
I was
red mist, red mist. Yeah.
Was he snickering on the corner? Huh? Was he taking advantage of the situation?
I was just watching it because I know what happens. I just watch it all unfold.
Yeah, no, he
I didn't have to say anything.
No, see, Cahal, the thing is, the other guy who was playing with is Cahal.
Yes.
He can't help it. He's just very dry.
Yeah.
And he's got great timing. So just at every moment, he would throw something in. But because I was raging, I just took the bait every time.
Yeah. And then at one point, he's raging. He's like, I'm sorry, guys. You know, I'm
going to apologize.
Two seconds later,
he was back. He was back.
But he did win. You did win. We had to let him win or else he would burn the house down.
I did pot the black that won the game for the Scots.
Yes, there you go.
Yes.
Ali, if you were Messi, would you extend the contract with PSG or move somewhere else?
If I were Messi, I think I would entertain the idea of Major League Soccer.
Okay. With Higuain in Miami, we just saw him
scoring. Well, I think I would say instead of Higuain.
Right.
Higuain, we can usher him out the door and bring in Lionel Messi. I would entertain that as a possibility. Maybe going back to Argentina, if that's something that he would be interested in. I don't think that would be in the plans. So maybe MLS would become a logical choice. But I wouldn't push it too far. I would also consider saying, you know what? I've had enough.
Really?
I've done enough. What else do I need to do with my career? What else do I need to do with my life? How about I just go and enjoy myself and enjoy my kids growing up?
Stevie?
I think I'm a little... It depends how much you like the game.
Mm. He loves the game, doesn't he?
Right. So if he loves the game, he should see out his time with PSG.
Right.
And then come to MLS and enjoy playing football.
Right.
With no real pressure. Certainly not the type of pressure that he's been used to throughout his career. And just enjoy himself.
Right.
Yeah.
That sounds nice. Sounds like a plan.
Absolutely.
And perhaps his way of giving back to the game is going to be sharing his experiences with those young players in Major League Soccer. That have seen the very best of Lionel Messi as they were growing up, and now this guy is right there sitting next to them in the locker room.
Yep.
How much can I soak in? How much can I absorb from what he has to teach? It may not be in his personality, but maybe at this point in his life, he would be willing to give a lot more of himself to his teammates.
Jan, how many goals do you think Sebastian Haller will score for Dortmund this season?
Wow, that is it's a very good question, because Sebastian Haller, fantastic at Eintracht Frankfurt. They had these Rebic, Jovic, and Sebastian Haller up front there doing so well in Europa League at that time as well. Then he went to West Ham. That was not a success. Back in Ajax now, he's back scoring a lot of goals in the Champions League. So I think this is a very good signing for Dortmund. I think that Dortmund with Adeyemi, they will together get the same amount of goals that Erling Haaland got last season. So I expect Sebastian to deliver 18, 19, 20 goals. He should do that. But also what you get from him at his best, this is he also a false number nine. He can set up people. I think that is a great signing for Borussia Dortmund. I think they got the best one available in the market this time.
Ali, how far can Barcelona go in the Champions League after the signings they've made? What's their back line?
Yeah, exactly.
Well, that's a good question.
That's kind of like you think of all like the Rafinha and everything, but
right. But exactly. According to the reports from Barcelona, is that Gerard Piqué is coming back, refreshed, renewed.
Well, if we believe reports, the back four is going to be Alonso, Aspilicueta,
yes,
Christensen, and Piqué.
Yes, and. So I think before we are able to answer this question, we need to see what is the final version of Barcelona. Because the reports coming out of Barcelona is that they're getting everybody. How they're doing it, and this is something we talked about in the show yesterday, is that there's an article by Sid Lowe on the website,
right,
in which he explains the financial situation with Barcelona, and I read it. And I read it all, and I focused, and right, I concentrated. And after I was done reading it, I was saying to myself, what did I just read?
Right.
This is nonsense. This is crazy. Right. None of this makes sense.
Because of Sid's inability to...
To communicate properly.
Right.
And my inability to comprehend.
Right.
You put those combination together and it just doesn't work. But
Should we set up a Zoom with you and Gab?
No, I don't want that in my life ever. That is the worst thing that you could do to me, Dan Thomas.
Stevie, let's get serious now. When you look back at your career, would you like to have made more appearances at World Cups? Did you play in all three games in 86?
Yes, and then I had to pull out in 90 because I needed a shoulder surgery.
Right.
Well, yeah, I mean, you want to play as many games as you can, but because of what happened to me in 86 made it an easy decision, because I could have gone to the World Cup and had the shoulder operation when I came back. But because in 86 I played with a torn stomach muscle and a hernia, and the following year I missed 80% of the season.
Right.
Because of it.
Because you played in the World Cup.
Because, yeah. So when I needed a shoulder operation going into the 90 World Cup, it was an easy decision because I wasn't taking a chance for my career again.
Would you swap 5 league titles, Champions League, FA Cups, everything you won for a World Cup? Really?
No.
Why?
Well, one football doesn't work that way, and no, it doesn't feel right. No.
No.
Do you think at this point in your life, Stevie Nicol, do you think at this point in your life you would be able to tear a stomach muscle? Do you
I don't think I have a stomach muscle. Shepherd's pie with that.
I don't think I've got a stomach muscle. So, yeah, you can't tell what you don't have.
But I guess it's quite interesting because Stevie Nicol played for Liverpool Football Club. He played for one of the best teams in the world at that stage, at least. So for me, like a Norwegian, when we qualified for 1994 World Cup, that was the first time we did that since 1938, and not even Stevie Nicol was born then. We knew this was the highlight of our career, to get to a World Cup. So I think that depends which club you're at. There's people like Ryan Giggs, George Best, they never played at the World Cup. So I think that we should be proud of playing in a World Cup, but we also have to analyze that based on which club we're from. There is a difference when you play for one of the best teams in the world, as Steve Nicol did at the time.
What type of goals did you love to score, Jan? The ones with your head or the ones with your feet?
The easy ones. a rebound or something. I was quite clever at rebounds. I was always going for the rebounds, scoring them, and then the odd big goal with a volley or something was always great as well. When I came to England, I was very proud when I scored a header because there were some good headers around in the Premier League. Like a goal scorer, I didn't care. I just wanted to see that ball in the net. And the best thing, I remember I scored against Newcastle for Barnsley, and I saw the ball. I had to slide the ball in goal after a corner. I knew that if I was to score, I had to hit the post with my body. Scored and I was carried off. And then when I came into the dressing room, the players asked if I touched the ball. And that was not funny because I was dead injured. And when I was in the dressing room, 1-1, I heard a celebration and Alan Shearer, of course, got the winner. So it was still a good feeling to give everything for a goal.
Was it against Newcastle that you scored that really long header?
Arsenal.
It was against Arsenal.
Arsenal.
There can't be many headers that have been scored in the top division that have been from that far out.
No.
Was it outside the box?
It was actually right on the edge of the box.
Yeah, you think about it.
Yeah. Yeah, it was actually my first game back from what we've been talking about.
From the injury? The
following season, yeah.
Right.
It was, and I can tell you, 2 weeks before that game, I thought my career was done. I was in pre-season training, I was getting all kinds of pains in my stomach.
Right.
That felt similar to the ones I had before I had the op. So in my head, I'm back to square one here.
Right.
And then the doctors told me, look, it's scar tissue. It feels like that because it's breaking up.
Okay.
But I was mentally all over the shop.
Right.
And from that game on,
that was the switch.
Boom. Switch.
That was it.
Yeah.
You talk us through it. Do you remember, like, who crossed it in, how it came to you?
It was a free kick.
Right.
John Barnes played it and somebody headed it out. And I was on the edge of the box for a ball knocked out or stopping Arsenal breaking. And it just came to me. I had no options. Everybody was running out. I just saw the goal, so I just put my big square head on it and smashed it in the top corner.
Have a look at it on YouTube. It's good.
Did you just see and notice when he said I put my big head on it, how he gave it the all?
Of course. Of course. Instinct, isn't it? Which did you prefer, headers or with your feet?
Oh, any goal at all. Do you know what I do enjoy? Any time I see goals back that were scored.
Yes.
I can remember exactly what was going through my head at the time.
Yeah.
Well, what
yeah.
sort of things?
No,
just what I was saying to you there. You know, you
absolutely.
Before you score on a goal, everything sort of comes to you. You get a picture of, if I do that, I do that. If I do that, I do that.
Right.
What the outcome's going to be.
Like the Matrix.
Huh. And so when I look at the goals, I don't particularly, I think more about what's going through my head when I did, when I put the ball in the net.
Right.
And why I put it where it did, than anything else. Great.
That's very cool.
No, that's good.
Yeah.
But enjoyable.
It's also interesting when you score a goal, because when you score the goal, the first second you only have by yourself, because you're the only one in the stadium who knows the goal is a goal. So then you have 1 second, and then you have the next second when the whole stadium explode, they know about it, and then 2-3 seconds later, that your teammates is all over you. It's a fantastic feeling, but that first second as well, when it's so, you're just lonely out there. It's just you and that goal and that goal line. Fantastic. I don't miss football, but I miss scoring goals.
yeah, that's I think from a fan's point of view, like how privileged you guys are to have that moment, because it's impossible, I imagine, to explain or indeed to replicate anywhere else in life.
And to Jan's point, there is no better feeling that when you know the ball is going in, right? And from your angle, you know exactly that this ball is going in. Everybody else is kind of waiting that half a second, that second that Jan is talking about. But for that fraction of a second, when you know that you make the contact that you want and that ball is going in and the goalkeeper is not getting to it, that's when you just release everything, because that is the pinnacle of our sport. To score goals. That is the point. That's why we play, to try to put the ball in the back of the net. And that fraction of a second is very special.
Finally, this is definitely not a fraction of a second. In their prime, which one of the panel would do Conte's 42 lengths the quickest? So, what are we talking, like 5 kilometres, is this? Like...
No, I could run.
Yeah?
I could run.
You could do it? You'd fancy yourself against these two?
Aye.
Yeah?
Aye.
I mean, I would do it, but I wouldn't do it quick. Right. I'll tell you that much.
Jan?
Well, I don't think MD would do it 42 quick.
Would you fancy a chance against Stevie?
Well, tell a lie.
No, I wouldn't, because I'm not saying I grew up Stevie Nicol, but I know that he was a good runner. But yes. I would also say that when you see how Conte is training them, we have to remember that Darwin is not talking about the survival of the fittest. He is the survival of the most adjustable. And I was very adjustable. When I had Felix Magath, the mad running coach of German football, I was the front. And in other years, when I had someone who was not very... when we were not eager on running, I was at the back. So it's also been adjustable. Do I think that Stevie Nicol would have won against us? Yes, I would, absolutely.
Right. There you are. God, this has been a very complimentary Stevie Nicol edition of Extra Time.
There's a couple of things that reminded me of something there. So when I'm telling you that I hated that, what he was doing, giving them 42.
Yes.
Players lose respect when the manager makes you do things that just don't seem to have any real purpose.
Okay.
And 42 of those, to me, doesn't seem to have a real purpose. And I'll give you a classic.
So it's demeaning.
A guy called Bertie Auld, a guy called Lou McCarry,
He
was a Scottish player,
yes.
He was the manager at Celtic, and a guy I played with, Gary Gillespie, went to play at Celtic when he was there. And in pre-season, he had them doing laps of a track, and they were doing cokey bags, so they had to carry somebody on the back.
Right.
And he was like, we're running round, or we're trying to run round. To somebody watching from behind the fence, it would be funny and ridiculous. Right. But he said, to do it, he said, I felt embarrassed doing it.
Right. And that's how you'd feel.
Because there didn't seem any reason for it.
Right.
So I don't think that doesn't help the manager.
Liverpool against Arsenal. What year, Stevie? Was it Highbury as well? Wasn't it? Was it Highbury?
It'd be 86, 87.
1987. Somebody put the link.
Sorry, 87, 88. Opening day of the season.
There you are. Somebody put the link in YouTube. Yeah, okay. I'm sure they will.
All right,
and you can watch the goal.
Okay.
It's very good. And it's
directing the show now, Dan. I see.
Yeah.
Somebody.
Anything else? We want down here.
We're going to put the link in.
Jan, how long is the rest of your holiday?
Another 4 days.
Good. Well, enjoy. We'll be back tomorrow.
Grazie mille.
See you tomorrow. Bye bye.